episode of our In the Paddock interview series. This week we have with us one of the most popular drivers from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, Al Dantes Jr. Al competed in this last weekend's Lake Superior Forest Rally, the final round of the Rally America Championship. We'll be talking about his start in rallying, how his Mazda RX-7 got the name Rexine, and of course, get a full recap from LSPR, including how he achieved his best finish to date. This is In the Paddock, from openpaddock.net. Well, coming at you from the left coast, I'm your host, Mike Shaw. Normally, this is where I introduce my co-presenter, Ian Holmes, but alas, he's gone on to a better place. No, he's not dead. He's at Wales Rally GB this week, and we're all a bit jealous. Anyway, I'm going solo on this one, and so without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest tonight, Al Dantes Jr. Al, how you doing?
Very good.
Are you relaxing? Let me tell you, I'm sitting here with a pretty nice brew here, Tsunami Export Stout by Pelican Brewing. What do you got?
I have a Keweenaw Brewing Company Widowmaker Black.
Local?
Yes, it's made right in Houghton. The bar room or tap room is actually about 12 feet from the finish of the LSPR street stage.
Ah, now it's a proper place to have a brewery.
Yes, I'd be running to the ground if I didn't have, you know, the hometown brew.
That's awesome. Awesome stuff. Well, before we talk about LSPR, let's kind of start from the beginning, if you don't mind. How did you get bitten by the rally bug? Because it seems you've gotten the disease pretty bad.
Yeah, it's actually a really cool story. Growing up, I was raised by a single mother, and my uncles actually, you know, took me out deer hunting and exploring and stuff like that. And what a lot of people don't know is my co-driver, Brandon Snyder, is actually my cousin. He's 2 years younger than me, and he was kind of like my brother growing up. If you ever get to talk to him for a while, you'll end up hearing a story about maybe a story or two of I've tried to kill him through the years. When I was like 10 or 12 years old, I might have dropped a swing set on him, and maybe the next year we were building a tree shack, and I dropped an entire sheet of plywood on him, and you know, now he hops in a rally car and we race together.
Is he just a glutton for punishment from you, or what?
he gets a lot of sympathy at the after parties, but yeah, when we were, well, I guess I was about 15 and he was 13. Carlos Sainz, you know, I don't know if it was Race of Champions or what, but it was kind of like they ran a figure eight course side by side, and I'd seen that on Speed Vision, and my uncle and my cousin said, well, we're going to the POR, and they tried to explain it to me, and I couldn't figure out what it was, and I ended up, I think it was 1994, 1995, I ended up on Mingy Creek at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and sleeping in a truck, and I get woken up, oh, the window's all fogged up, and we hop out, and here comes this screaming Audi through the woods, all four brakes of fire and banging and anti-lag and turbos, and yeah, I was kind of done right then and there.
Just brilliant. That's kind of what hooked you, huh? And you've been, so what was your first rally then?
After the first bite back in 1995, Brandon became one of the youngest stage captains of LSPR ever. He was like probably 17 or 18. Together we did stage captaining and controls for a lot of years. 2007, we finally took the plunge, and the late Jeff Moyle put on an event up in Houghton called the Mini LSPR, and it was a little 30-mile event held on private property. I think the entry fee was $99. The licenses were $50. And Paul Cole, he had a team called Barefoot Racing, and his sign-on name was the Rally Hippie. And as soon as this event came about, he posted on specialstage.com, anybody wants to run my car, $250. And I got a hold of him immediately. I said, dibs. I got dibs all day. And we made it happen. We did that one event in 2007. I think we paid a $40 in damage for a broken wheel. And we walked away and never drove again until 2012. I ended up buying my own car.
So you're saving up to be able to do it all on your own at that point, huh?
Well, actually, rally hangovers are kind of heavy sometimes, and when you pay all that money to drive somebody else's car, it's kind of, you know, maybe if it was my own car, I'd drive a little faster or this or that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was almost like a depression for 3 or 4 years. And then finally it's like, yeah, I got to get my own car. I got to go do this and do it proper.
Yeah, except for then when you get your own car, it's like, but I got to pay for those parts if I abuse them too much.
Yep.
The special tool that I'm going to need, or
well, they don't explain that to you when you buy a car. You know, the seller will always be, "Oh, it's turnkey, it's ready to go. Just buy a helmet and you're ready." And then, as I look around my garage, I've got two or three VR6 engines in the corner. I've got wiring looms hanging from the ceiling. I've got all these specialized tools and ECUs and timing belt kits. And
oh my!
Yeah. And I was supposed to have gotten rid of all this stuff earlier this year.
Supposed to. That happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm racing a Mazda, and I got a garage full of Volkswagen stuff.
So let's talk about the cars, because I believe Rexine is a newer car for you this year, right?
Yes.
So what did you have before that leading up to Rexine, and how did Rexine get her name? It is a she, right?
Of course. back in 2012, it was in probably right around in January, I decided, you know, this is the year we're going to do it. I think it was right when Magnum Opus was announced as being resurrected, which is Magnum Opus Pro Rally is over in Newberry, Michigan, which is about 3 hours away. So I'm kind of blessed with being in the center of a ton of amazing rallies. I've got Magnum Opus, which is 3 hours away, LSPR, which is 1 mile away, in Headwaters and Namaji and Ojibwe. All these rallies are top notch, and they're all within 5, 6, 7 hours of me. So I decided, you know, I have no excuse. Let's make it happen. I was actually going to fly out to Vermont and pick up a two-door Subaru. Mm-hmm. That the cage was done and some kid had acquired it, and he cut out the door bars, and I don't think he really knew what he had, and I was going to fly out there and rescue this car and bring it back to the Midwest. And I'm an aerospace machinist by trade, and my little brother worked with me, and he said, well, what about that Jetta down in Green Bay? And Mike Murbach, who's kind of famous in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. He had a bright orange Jetta with a VR6 in it, and he had always teased me with it, and I got a hold of him, and I said, coming to get that, and he says, okay, and I got up the next morning, I grabbed my trailer, grabbed some money out the bank, and headed down his way, and luckily, I didn't get his message till I was at his front door. He said, maybe let's do this next month, and he's like, no, I'm at your front door, let's load up the car, and let's go.
Let's do it.
So throughout the years, I campaigned the VR6, and just like any rookie hot shoe, I started out very, very slow. I had Matt Soka as a co-driver. He's actually a Pro 2 driver in the Torque series, which is the off-road series.
Yep.
Crandon and Bark River, his truck he's been racing is like 800 horsepower.
Right.
He agreed to be my co-driver in the LSPR back in 2012. I forgot. Before that, I did Ojibwe, and I had Jenny Majak as my co-driver, who was boyfriend-girlfriend with the late Matt Marker. And I had some excellent support at that event from Sam and Rochelle Kaltak with their Subaru's team. That was, I think, their second or third event. So I got engulfed with a lot of really cool people really early on. And through the years, we've kind of, I don't know if we've enabled or encouraged or just worked our way up through the years. Finally, last year, I started putting up really, really good results with the Jetta. I was really happy with it. I had finally gotten it to a point where it was reliable and I could push it to its limits. And we ended up finishing second in two-wheel drive regionally at LSPR behind Michael Hooper in his BMW. He's from down in Chattanooga. So we figured if we could finish, well, I didn't tell Brandon, my co-driver, about it, but I had made up my mind that if we had a strong result with the Jetta, that I had finally reached the full potential of the car, and if we were going to get any better as a team, it was time to let it go.
So then that brings us to Rexine then, and what was the choice to go, why the choice to go rear-wheel drive?
I guess it was my perception that rear-wheel drive is rather easy to upgrade. You know, you can switch out a rear axle ratio for a tighter event, you know, switch out your gearing and stuff like that. With the RX-7, I've never had one. I know nothing about rotaries. And I decided to actually, Mad Mike Halley from Tulsa, Oklahoma, he got a hold of me and he said, buddy, he said, if you're driving this Jetta with an open diff, one-wheel drive, and you're competing at LSPR, he goes, you're going to love this car. You know, he was selling it to me. He said, it's got 411 rear gears. It's got 240 horsepower, 5-speed, independent rear suspension. He, you know, he had me sold.
Yeah, he definitely, he loves his old RX-7 for sure. So, yeah, I can see why.
What he didn't tell me was this car, I kind of knew the history of it. It was built back in 2004. By Cable Roads out in Idaho, Boise.
Mm-hmm.
And he entered 6 events with it, and he won every single event he entered for Group 5. He also won the 2005 Regional National Championship they used to hold at 100 Acre Wood. So when I inherited this car, it was completely disassembled. All the panels were off of it. It wasn't running. It came in boxes, pretty much. The seats weren't in it. When I finally did get close to getting it to run, I hopped in it, and even the gas pedal was gone.
Oh, my. So this was, yeah, like you said, it arrived in boxes. You basically had to just build the whole thing.
Yeah, kind of. For years, I ran mud drags, and for 5 years, I did dirt track stock car racing, And I was excited to start this project because how hard could it be? You know, you got an engine, a transmission, and a rear axle. Well, I opened up the hood, and that was my first sight of the rotary and a turbo. And I pretty much closed the hood and went back inside, and I got a hold of Cable Roads, who built it back in 2004. And he sent me the Bible, which was his build manual that he built the car with. And I got that this winter, and I sat in the house, and UP winters are kind of desolate. You kind of just hibernate for the week, for the winter. And I read that book front to back twice. And I came outside with my voltmeter and my 10-millimeter wrench and went to work. And about 3 weeks later, it fired up for the first time. And all the smart people and all the rotary people said, well, if this car's been sitting for 11 years, you just don't even try starting that motor. Pull it out and rebuild it.
But it started up just fine.
Yeah, Mad Mike was kind of concerned about it. I was concerned about it, but I followed a set procedure, and the car gets better every time I run it.
I must say, hats off to the guys that documented the whole build process, too, because that's nice to have that Bible, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess that answers your question about Rexine. When I got a hold of the original owner, he said, it's your car, you can do what you want with her, but her name's Rexine. And I went, hey, solved the problem right there. I don't have to worry about calling her by the wrong name or anything else. So after every stage or before every stage, when we get kind of nervous, we give her a little tap on the dash, and we promised her a nice, shiny, new aluminum radiator if she did good at LSPR.
That's awesome. So she was previously named that, huh?
Yep, that was her given name.
Well, that's awesome. You know, you were talking about how you, got so sucked into the sport. A lot of support network around you of other rallyists. And one thing that I notice is, you know, you're very active on social media. There's a lot of people that, look to you now for insight and information. What is it about rally that gets you so excited and makes you enjoy it? I mean, you said you did some of this dirt track stuff. But what makes rally specifically special to you that, You've gone all in on this and obviously doing quite well and having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I think it's the rawness and the simplicity of Rally, because at the end of the day, it's just two people sitting in a car, talking to each other, going as fast as they can. And they aren't, you're not racing against the guy in front of you or the guy behind you. You know, you're racing against yourself, and it's the teamwork that makes it work. And actually, one of the local radio guys, he's a big racetrack promoter. And every time he sees me, he sits me down and he asks me, "How does this rally work again?" Because he doesn't understand how we can do this without, you know, we don't have a fire truck 50 feet away, and we don't have an ambulance personnel 50 feet away. And I explain the emergency procedures, and we have ham radios, and we have this, and we have that. And our first responders is the next car behind you. You know, he's 60 seconds back. He's going to be there. Everybody's going to take care of each other. Nobody's cutthroat. Nobody's protesting each other. We're all family. You know, he gets a real big kick out of that.
That's one of the thing that I keep repeating again and again, I guess, on this show, right? It's the competition is great, but so is the camaraderie, right?
Yeah.
And
And that's one really cool picture I got this weekend was two guys that aren't on social media. Is the you know their team has a Facebook page, but big shout out to Mike Erickson and Jacob Good and the Weird Beard Rally team. They have a yellow Mitsubishi Lancer, but the only time I see them, I don't have their phone numbers. They don't exist on social media other than their team page. But those are two top-notch guys, and we were getting ready to start the last stage of the rally, and came over, and I asked the driver, I said, "Come over here, take a selfie with me." And that's one cool picture I posted this weekend was he's got his arm around me, I got my arm around him, and his co-driver's in the back doing a dance and checking the lug nuts.
Love it. Love it.
Oh yeah, and that's the kicker is they finished second in national two-wheel drive, and I got third, and he had no clue, and I didn't find out till the very last minute. So I actually went over and told him, and he was stunned just as I was.
Oh, that is so great. That like that, it's fun competing against guys that are just that much fun. I was listening to another podcast some other guys talk about, and one of them was explaining about doing like autocross stuff, and I went and I ran a run and beat one of the guys so bad that he just packed up and left, even though why not just stay there and just have fun? What the hell, right? And yet some of these guys are just attitude is such that it's win or nothing and kind of go storming off, and rally is so not that, right?
Yeah, I've had those situations at racing dirt track. We've actually had confrontations in our pits where, you know, other people, well, I don't know if anybody knows about Tower City Race Team, but it's actually that's the team and that I fly under.
Well, that was going to be one of the questions, actually. Ian had a couple questions he sent to me before he went gallivanting in the woods of Wales. He wanted to actually ask about why is it called Tower City Race Team, and where is Tower City, and what's that all about?
Okay, Tower City Race Team. 2004, I have two younger brothers. One is 5 years younger than me, the other is 10 years younger than me. But we always had a thing around June 1st. We would go watch mud bogs and mud drags, and every year it was just what the three brothers did. Well, me being the older brother, I was the first one to have a four-wheel drive truck. And they said, "Well, guess what? We're taking it and we're mud dragging it." And I said, "No, we're not." And of course, you know, 2 hours later, we're at the mud bog signing up. And it was a really nice professional organization. It was Upper Peninsula Mud Drag Association. It had a board, had tech inspectors, everything like that. And we showed up, you know, a bunch of young kids. And they give you this big sheet to fill out. And it says, "Well, what's your team name?" And I live in Herman, Michigan. Well, I did at the time. Herman is a small town, probably the highest elevation town in Michigan. But it has, I think, four radio towers up there that are like 600 feet tall. So I said, well, that's Tower City Race Team right there on the spot. Less than 10 seconds of thinking, we wrote down Tower City Race Team and said, well, what's the truck name? Oh, let's write down Bad Influence. And that was quite a bit of foreshadowing because I figured we start doing this, where's it going to end up? But through 5 years, we campaigned Bad Influence with Tower City Race Team, and we typed up recaps and we had sponsors and we went all over the UP and Wisconsin. And I think I won the championship 2 years and won at every single event across the UP and northern Wisconsin, and then moved into Dirt Circle Track. Dirt Circle Track was actually my brother, 10 years younger than me, Scott. When he was like 16, he built a little race car and he went out racing, and I didn't go for a year. I wouldn't go watch him. I wouldn't do anything. And I was, you know, kind of tiny, you know, little small famous for my mud racing. Mm-hmm. And I snuck into the event and everybody see me there and they said, oh, you're screwed. And I went, yep. So about 2 weeks later, I had my car built and I was out there racing with them. And the very first night I tied the track record for barrel rolls. I
did three
barrels down the backstretch.
Was this like a midget or something, or what'd you build?
This was a Saturn.
What?
I was racing a four-cylinder Saturn. Yeah, came out of corner number two, and I wanted to tuck down into the apex of the corner, and there was another car there at, you know, 60 miles an hour. I clipped it, and like I say, tied the track record, 3.5 barrel rolls down the backstretch, and that was my first night in dirt track. And then, I think we did 5 or 6 years. At one point, we ended up moving into V8s and pure stock and bomber class. And we had the three brothers. We each had cars. And then my crew chief figured out how easily we were doing it, and he got a car as well. So we had four cars out there in the same class. And it was really nice. And like we were talking about earlier with the camaraderie, we had other teams that worked with us, but the bad dudes, they kind of went away because they realized, hey, if we wreck Al, Scott's going to come get us. And if we hit Scott, Al and Elwood are going to come get us. So we had some really good racing there for a few years.
Your own little family mafia there to keep the ruffians away, huh?
Well, yeah, we were. That's one good thing we've always enjoyed with Tower City Race Team is we are sportsmen. We understand racing doesn't exist unless you have good sportsmanship and you treat your community and your friends and your competitors well. So that's our number one motto is, you know, be a sportsman. Even if you don't make the track, make sure your fellow competitor does. So, but through the years, we had a few other teams meet us by the trailer, and I had some big dudes with me, and I always told them, put your hands in your back pockets. And they said, well, what if they swing at us? I said, well, it's $100 a swing. I said, you make darn sure your hands are in your back pockets first. But no one ever got hit. And luckily, we had some bad wrecks through the years. And being a small town dirt track, you know, we didn't have Hans devices. We didn't have certified harnesses or certified cages. And everybody went home at the end of the night. And that was cool.
Yeah, that's the important thing for sure. Well, speaking of like the family and the involvement with racing, one of the other questions that Ian sent me was, you're a family man yourself, got a couple of kids. So have your daughters ever expressed an interest in driving a rally car or co-driving for you?
The truth of the matter is I actually have 6 daughters.
Oof.
My oldest just started college this year. She's a college basketball player at Bay College in Escanaba.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yep. I think she's looking to be a surgeon now. But, I was very lucky there. She's National Honor Society and stuff like that. And the next one, she's a freshman in high school, and she's got her mom's height. I think she's already 5'10". Sadly, she's got her dad's athletic ability, so she better get to work on the books. Then the three in the middle, they're a bunch of Spitfires. I think they are first, third, and fourth grade. The fourth grader's a librarian. The third grader's a linebacker. The first grader's a comedian.
It's funny how you can kind of point out the traits already that early, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, as far as co-driving, no, not yet. I'm pretty sure my librarian would want to do it, just because she's a little clean freak. And she actually, that was on her list for Santa last year, was cleaning supplies. And Santa obliged. She got her cleaning supplies for Christmas.
That's hilarious. I think every parent would be proud of that.
I had to change the way I introduced her around friends because she started introducing herself as the brains of the operation. If there was ever one that was going to co-drive, that would be the one.
That's awesome. So let's talk LSPR. Obviously, your home rally, you said it's only about a mile away. You know these roads probably better than most anyone. What were the roads like this year compared to years past?
There was a couple roads missing or stages missing this year that we usually run. I would say this year's LSPR was probably the smoothest ever. There was one stretch on Herman that was actually underwater for 2 weeks. I heard it was underwater for 2 weeks. And then the Arvon stage. I don't know if you know what pit run gravel is, but it's this horrible, horrible gravel. It's like the size of potatoes.
Oh, my. And now, are they the round, like, river rock looking stuff, but they're big?
Yeah.
Gotcha. It's
the cheapest stuff that the county can use to fill in nasty roads. And we had about 6 miles of it on the Arvon Road, and it had washed out on the sides. And the ditches were about 18 inches to 2 feet deep. But nobody could see them because it was under the leaves.
Ooh.
And as you've seen before, I have a very large truck that I use for recce, and I checked out a couple of those ditches, and I looked at my co-driver, Brandon, and I said, yeah, we're going to have to be quite tidy in here. And a lot of people claim they got a lot of damage up in the Arvon this year, and we didn't get a scratch on our car, and I think clean, safe, and tidy was the order of the day up there.
Yeah, just stay in the middle of the road. Don't cut.
Yeah. And, there was actual notes in the recce that said washout. And I couldn't see it when we were racing at speed. And the way my co-driver tells the story is I said, stay left, washout, stay left, washout. And then, you know, a bunch of expletives and washout. I just barely missed it. And I still don't remember. I remember seeing it in recce, but I didn't see it at race speed. And I think a lot of other people hit it and got flat tires, and I didn't. So a little bit of luck.
Yeah, definitely. You know, actually, speaking of the recce truck, your pickup truck, Ian had to wants to apologize profusely for accusing your Silverado from being a Ford F-150.
Mine as well. It kicked my daughter.
Ow. That bad, huh? It was a little tight, though, on those stages at Ojibwe driving that thing, wasn't it?
Oh, that was unreal. I asked Brandon about it, and he actually likes riding in the truck. He's got two big reasons. One, we can see over the top of the crests, and we can write a little bit more generous of a note. You know, where if you're down on the ground, you'll see a 150 and a crest and a 150 and a crest and a 200. Well, we'll just change that to a 700. The second reason he likes the truck is because his very first LSPR, we did recce in my wife's minivan.
Oh, my goodness. And she knew you were doing this?
we were doing the stow and go. But, yeah. When we finished every stage there, we still had to wonder if we had wheels and tires on the wife's brand new van. So he he's kind of happy to have a big one-ton truck now where we're not worried so much about the damage.
You know, one thing that I noticed, you know, one of the big headlines for LSPR this year was that Dirtfish had invited a special person and a special car to come. And I guess he just did kind of a zero car kind of duty. Is that right? Hannu Mikkola.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get to meet him, but I guess he was like, but he was the 1983 World Rally Champion. I did get to speak to some of the older retired rallyist friends that I have here at the event, and they said they got to spend a lot of good quality time with them, and they were speechless and humbled that they got to speak with them. And maybe it's just, you know, maybe age difference there. You know, if it was more of a, you know, maybe Sebastian Loeb for me or somebody like that, you know, be more awestruck. But I'd never seen him race and didn't know much right. about him. So.
But yeah, the Dirtfish guys, though, they brought over a Mark II Escort. And that wasn't the only Mark II Escort, because you had Burke's Mark II was out there. But his has got that modified, that Mustang V6 engine in there. Yeah. So you had a couple of escorts out, which is kind of cool to see some of the classic, at least, styles out there on a rally.
Yeah, there were some amazing cars. It started, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, but the Group B Rally Club asked the LSPR organizers if they could park next to the expose. You know, they just wanted to be near it. And now it's kind of like the centerpiece of the park expose in downtown Lawrence. They put them right on the lawn at the waterfront, and you know, that's kind of the centerpiece for everybody. Half the rally's on one side, half's on the other, and the vendors and the historic rally cars go in the middle.
Oh, that sounds like a great setup. Do you guys get a pretty good crowd when you're setting up Park Expo for that?
Yeah, we did very, very well. Usually for LSPR, it's 40 degrees out, and it's right on Lake Superior, and the wind is blowing, and everybody's got their hoods on and their chooks, and they're, everything's drawn up tight. But this year, we got sunburn. I believe it was like 84, 86 degrees on Thursday and Friday, and unreal. And then this morning it was 32 degrees and a hurricane on Lake Superior. There's just some unreal videos right now of what happened in the Keweenaw Peninsula today.
Yeah, you know, speaking of the weather, one of the things I did see that seemed like there was some issues with dust, especially with the 1 minute windows between majority of the competitors out there. Seemed like that was that an issue for you guys, or did wind eventually pick up and help blow it out?
The first night, it was an issue for us, but it wasn't anywhere near close of what I've dealt with before. I've done rallies over in Minnesota, Headwaters and Ojibwe, where you literally had to slow down to 10 miles an hour, whereas this, you know, dust is a lot harder at night. And this was our first night stages of the year. But with us having the speed factor of the Jetta and the increased speed of the RX-7 on the fast stages, we were taking 45 seconds to a full minute out of our previous stage times. So we were catching everybody all night.
You know, that actually brings me to another question then. You know, obviously as you increase pace and all that stuff, do you go off of Jemba notes or do you write your own?
When we did Ojibwe this year, it was our first time writing pace notes. And we did the pace note training class with Mark Williams the night before, which was awesome. You know, it took a little bit of the nervousness out of it. But to be just thrown out to the wolves you know, here's your blank piece of paper. You have no Jemba. Start writing, boys. And I explained it to Brandon after the event. I said, you know, I think I actually kind of like writing my own notes. It's exactly the opposite of what used to be called a notes familiarization pass is what it originally called when Rally America added recce to the Jemba, because since it's not a true recce, it's just a notes familiarization pass. But yeah, it's the exact opposite. With the Jemba, you drive down the roads and the co-driver reads them and the driver makes any changes. Whereas when you start from scratch, the driver's talking the whole time, and the co-driver's supposed to be writing down what the driver says. But yeah, I was very happy with what we did at Ojibwe. I spoke with Mark Williams after the event, and I said, "You were right." I said, "Our notes were spot on. They were perfect. They were off by a number, but they were consistent." And luckily we had cars in front of us where we could see the braking zones, where if I had it like a regular right five or a left five, but the braking zone looked like, hey, maybe these guys wrote down a four. We had no incidents. So that was good. And if you can, I think we finished first in two-wheel drive regionally and third overall regionally. And that was our first time writing notes. So we were pretty happy.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that really does show, you know, when we talked to Rhiannon and Alex before, when they started explaining that, look, Jemba's safety notes, they're about how to stay in the road and be safe and tells you where all the things you should be worried about are, which is fine, but they don't show you the racing line, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, that's really exciting. I find the note stuff just so fascinating.
Yeah. The other cool thing when you write your own notes is you can use your own vocabulary, and me and Brandon have a couple creative terms, which I won't share, but they're in there.
God damn. I want to hear that now.
I'll give you one.
Yeah, this is one.
This is actually Jeff Timpey of Banana King Rally Team. He puts out some of the best YouTube videos, mm-hmm. but he puts a lot of outtakes in there of him and the co-driver. And, they were at a start line a couple of years ago, and he goes, or the co-driver reads it, and he goes, start 300, squishy, left, squishy, 300, squishy. And so now anytime me and Brandon see a little jog in the road or say it's a left six, right six, left six, he'll just say 400, squishy. And that's fully, you know, Jeff Timpey of Banana King Rally Team. I don't know if that's how he uses it, but that's how we use it.
That's great stuff. That's awesome. But and the thing is, with those terms like that, I mean, you know what that is, right? I mean, it's not like you can confuse that note with something else. It's so distinct, right?
Yeah. That was a good one at Ojibwe. There's that unique section of road where you come flying down a hill and you take a left three, and all of a sudden there's a lake in front of you. And then, you know, you have a little S-shaped channel that cuts between the two lakes. Well, we're coming flying down this hill, you know, 80, 90 miles an hour, and I hear left three late. And I'm thinking, left three late? Why is this late? And I'm like, oh, he said late, but he's supposed to say lake. And, you know, I'm having this conversation in my head while I'm,
right.
you know, doing 60 miles an hour through two lakes. And I look over. Oh, I don't look over at him, but once he takes a breath, I go, lake, not late. Yeah, he goes, yeah, just shut up, left three.
You know, it's funny. I was talking once with Chris Duplessis, and Chris was talking about how when he was doing his notes, you know, there'd be something like, it would say tree inside and on the notes, and he did a lot of modified Jemba, and mm-hmm. he'd always say just, that would be, you know, like left to keep out, or, you know, mm-hmm. he wouldn't say anything about the tree because you end up going where you're looking, right? And if he looked for the damn tree, that's where he's going to end up.
Yeah, that's one of the very first things Brandon does with the notes. last year at Headwaters, Andrew Goss of FO Racing, which the FO, I think he might have changed it to Flat Out Racing on Facebook, but it was one of his first events in a new Subaru RS, and you come flying down this hill at Headwaters, and that's what it says is, right three, drop outside, and that's what he did. He took a right three and he dropped outside, and
oh, no.
He went down about 14 feet and his rally was over. And so that's Goss's corner, and that's, like I said, it's the first thing Brandon does with all the notes is there's no drop outsides in there. It says stay inside. You say drop outside, that's what Al's gonna do.
So there's actually at LSPR, there's a specific corner that catches a lot of people out. You posted recently some video from, was it, whose video was that?
Cameron Steely.
Cameron Steely, that's who it was, sorry.
There's actually three good ones, but I'll go ahead and talk about this.
Yeah, one. I was going to say, so there's one corner that specifically catches people out. Why do you think that specific corner is so tricky?
It's, you know, I've been running this event or participating in this event since 2012 and volunteering for many years before that. And you see carnage on certain corners and it's consistent. This corner, we race this stage in two different directions. We race it uphill, we race it downhill. And there's always somebody wrecked on that corner, no matter what. And this was the last stage of the rally and the second running of it. When Cameron went off, you start the rally, and this is like a mile and a half into it. And it's really, really fast, and you're doing a bunch of sixes, and there's 1-4 in the middle. And then you get right back up to speed, and you're flying, and I think it's a left 5. But it goes downhill. It's off camber. It fades away. It's a soft, sandy surface. And the bank is probably 6 or 7 feet tall, and people just ride up that bank. And Jeff Reamer and Ben Slocum did it on the first pass, and he destroyed his brand-new 2016 STI that he built himself. And the last stage of the rally, it was Mark Williams and Angela Cosner, and he got trapped in the car. LaRosa's were next ones on scene. Luckily, everything got shut down. The stage was stopped properly. Everything was good, and that was the last Spore stage, and I think everybody was pretty nervous to be done with LSPR, but there was a lot of stuff that happened in that mile and a half that would have changed a lot of results, not only in two-wheel drive regionally, but also the NLO results. And as far as the corner, it's just, I don't know. Even when I'm racing uphill, I change it to a right 4 instead of a 5, and it just makes a big difference for me. Hopefully it'll help everybody else out in the future. And this stage is Mingy Creek, and Mingy Creek is pretty famous because years ago, the national government shut down on LSPR week. So all of the U.S. Forest Service roads were not eligible for use at LSPR, and they had to scramble and use certain roads, county roads, repeatedly. And this was the year that David Higgins and Ken Block were fighting for the championship right down, you know, the nitty-gritty. And this was the stage they had to run 6 times. So there's a lot of characters that at LSPR have ran this stage. I didn't run it that year because my car was blown up. But they had that stage so rutted up, the guys said that the ruts were 18 inches deep for 6 miles. And that's from going up and down that stage all weekend.
Yeah.
I think they only had 3 or 4 stages for the entire event. Yeah, the other two corners at LSPR completely changed the face of the two-wheel drive national for us and enabled us to get on the podium. But the Arvon stage, it starts out in a really black, dark forest, and it's got that black topsoil surface to it. And it happened to Nathan Usher last year. And then it happened to the Honda factory driver. He's got the 2017 Group 5 Honda Civic. But he was in the top 5, and he hit this corner, and it's a half a mile from the start, and he slid off, and he's out in a swamp. So everybody passed by him, and he ended up getting pulled out eventually. But so he was out of the running. And then Michael Hooper, he's got his brand-new Lexus. He ran Black River stages with it to shake it down. His goal right from the get-go was to chase down Sheamus at LSPR, and that's what he built the car for. And the second running on that stage, he did the same thing, and he didn't get to see the Honda behind him do it, so he didn't know what was there. And he did the same thing out in the Tules, out in the swamp. And, you know, the last 3 times I've ran that stage, there's been somebody out in that swamp.
Oh, no.
It's like, come on, guys. There's one corner you need to respect for 9 miles. It's that one. And it's just a simple right 3. The corner's really wide. You could probably fit 6 or 7 cars wide through there, but it tightens up to maybe only 1 car wide. So it looks really big until you get to the exit. And that's where the swamp is.
I see. So just that it's so wide, it just kind of gives you a little too much encouragement to try and take it faster, and bad things happen at the end of that corner.
Yeah, and it's got that black topsoil surface that's just slime.
Well, you obviously had a great LSPR. Your best finish to date. You ended up third in national two-wheel drive. So congratulations. That's awesome for you and your co-driver slash kind of brother. what's been the key, do you think, to your performance just getting better and better like this?
I think the actual key to my success is to be able to go slow. I can realize real quick when things are getting out of control, and I just back it out a little bit. And just being a family man, I don't take really any unnecessary risks. Yeah, we still do 100 miles an hour through the woods, flying through the trees, but we do it in a calculated fashion. And the big thing is with rally is if you can eliminate all the small things, you know, flat tires or bent control arms, or my guys will think it's hilarious, but I've forgotten the hood pins a time or two. If you can eliminate all those small things and just run the entire event smooth, clean, fast, and safe, good results come.
You know, it happens to guys in WRC to forget those hood pins. So, who was it? That's right. Andreas Mikkelsen. He wasn't used to the Hyundai, right? And they had switched to put the light pod back in the boot, right? And they weren't used to how it mounted because him and his co-driver had only been with the team. You know, they're fresh to it. And they hadn't practiced removing the light pod. And by the time they got that thing situated and got it in there, they had to start the darn stage. And they forgot to go back and latch the hood pins. So they're in Spain going down one of the tarmac stages, hood completely flipped up, and they're looking through the opening underneath.
Yeah. I've had it happen two or three times. So
Ooh.
The guys get a good kick out of it. I had it happen once at midnight at LSPR back in 2012. You know, it was a stage that started out fast, like 800 yards straight. But we had a 20-minute delay, and it was dark, and I was walking down the line of cars talking to everybody, and I got back to the car, and I could see immediately in the glow of the lights that there was steam coming out of the car. So I opened the hood, and I looked around and noticed the radiator fans weren't coming on, and co-driver hollered, you know, we got to get up to the start. So I hopped in the car, we got up to the start, and shut the car off and wait for our minute, and we took the start, and you know, tore out of there, first gear, second gear, third gear, woof, there goes the hood.
Oh my. But hey, you got great cooling.
Yeah. So then again, this year with Rexine, our first event, we did Central UP Rally as our very first rally with the car. It's first time it competed since 2006, and it rained for 5 days straight, and the roads were saturated. Every single corner was just loaded like a pond, and the roads were nonstop water. And wouldn't you believe a car from Arizona wasn't waterproof?
not their biggest concern there, right?
Yeah. We had water in the electrical. We had mud going down the turbo. The car was cutting out. This was all on the first stage. And so the second stage, I started trying to miss the water puddles and go a little faster without killing the car. And I came around the corner and there was just a 30-foot mud puddle. And I shimmied to the right and it was like a left four. And I tried to take the high side around it and center punched a tree.
Oof.
And
ow.
After I built this car, you know, all winter and second stage, I center punched a tree. So there was a few expletives, and it started right back up, and we backed out, and I looked at my co-driver and said, you can put your belts back on now. We're still going. But the radiator fans were in front of the engine, so we had destroyed those. The hood was curled up, and I think we had 10 more miles to go in the stage. So we're trying to see over the top of the hood that's curled up. Just from stopping, the inside of the car was fogged up. So we're flying along. We finally get to the finish, and the car didn't get too hot, you know, because we were going quick enough to get air going through there. So we both sat on the hood and smashed it back down and got going down the stage and Same thing. We started ingesting water, and this was the third stage. And then the horn started going off. So we did 5 miles with the horn going nonstop, which the marshals quite enjoyed that.
I'm sure the spectators and marshals thought that, hey, you're doing that just for us, right?
Yep. So then we ended up hitting a huge puddle and ingested water and killed the car. And I got out and Brandon did the triangle procedure and I was under the hood. Finally, after 5 minutes, I got the car to run again. And with it being a rotary and a turbo, I sat in the car and held it at $4,000 and tried to get everything to clean out. Waited for Brandon to untriangle and get in and belt it up. And we go tearing down the stage. And 2 miles later, I slap my pocket and he goes, "What?" And I said, "I have the hood pins in my pocket." And just then I passed a marshal spot and I went, "I should pull over." And boom, there went the hood again.
Right? Oh, no.
The brand new windshield. And oh, it's like, oh man. And it was split second, like, "Hey, I should pull over," and then wham, here comes the hood through the windshield.
So do you keep a spare hood and windshield on you from now on when you go to events, just in case?
That was the good thing, was that windshield that had been actually in the car for less than 36 hours. Call up my auto body guy. It's like, "Yeah, you know that windshield we waited for 4 weeks? Yeah, let's order another one." One thing the spectators like to give us trouble for at Park Exposé is they always ask Brandon, "Where's the hood pins? Where's the hood pins?"
Awesome. That's great. Well, from here, obviously awesome LSPR for you guys. Great job there. This is kind of where we kind of move on. We ask just kind of some kind of rapid fire kind of short, quick questions. One of the things that I've been kind of interested in, I noticed you posted a little bit ago a little like thing about Sisu, which was very well known with Jari Matti Latvala. You obviously follow the WRC a little bit. Do you have some sort of like favorite music you listen to, or something that gets you amped up before you start a stage?
As far as music, you're pretty stereotypical. You got your go-to. "I Better Not Drive" while these songs are on, and that's, the Days of Thunder stuff. And you got your Metallica, "Fuel in the Fire," and a little bit of Eminem. I listen to everything.
So what's your favorite North American rally you've competed in so far?
That's a real tough one. Each rally, a lot of people, they try to play rally politics or this or that or the other. And this year I bought all three rally licenses. I've competed with all three sanctioning bodies. Wow. Favorite event.
Yeah, and the thing is, this isn't about trying to play favorites as far as, any sanctioning body. I mean, I guess just organizers have to pick one, right? And you've done volunteering, so you know how the organizer side kind of works a little bit. So it's really just, ones that are organized well, roads that you just love, that are just, "This is my favorite freaking stage." We'll ask that next, what your favorite stage is. But yeah, just overall, just ones that just, every time I go here, it's just fun.
I think I'm gonna go with Headwaters. Headwaters Rally is in Walker, Minnesota, at the casino where Ojibwe was. Mm-hmm. But I believe the last time we did it, there was 30 cars, 75 stage miles, extremely low entry fee, and no pressure. And we went out, we ran four stages, came in, we had an hour and a half service. I actually got towed in by the... it's called Stang Rally, like Mustang, mm-hmm. but it's Stang Rally on Facebook. Robert Lefebvre, but we broke down on the side of the road. Our fuel pump quit, and he pulled us 8 miles to service. We couldn't duplicate the problem at service. We went back out, and we ended up finishing. Oh, yeah, forgot about this one. The car ran great the rest of the event, and 6 miles from the finish of the last forest stage, I hit a rock and blew my front tire off.
Oof.
So, after having a very long day, I decided I'm not going to change it. And I drove 6 miles to the finish, 70 miles an hour through the Minnesota woods, and made it to the finish, got to the finish, and realized we had left the impact and the fancy Gorilla socket at service.
Oh, no.
And Brandon already had the car jacked up, and I told him, "Drop the jack." And he goes, "We're done, right?" And I said, "Nope, not yet. Get in the car." And We drove 12 miles back to the finish, which you've been there. You've seen the county highway that you have to go to do the stages. We did that with a missing wheel, our missing tire.
So driving on
the wheel started. It started disintegrating, and at one point we thought we blew up the engine, but it was actually just the inner parts of the rim banging against each other and flying off into the woods. Luckily, it was on the right side, so we could drag it in the dirt. And we got to the casino, and there's like an 8-lane stoplight there, and I'm like, stay green, stay green. Nope, it's red, and we're in the front row, and we're riding pretty ghetto.
And this is in the Jetta that's essentially one-wheel drive at this point, right, because the open diff?
Yeah, so that rim is doing like 70 miles an hour, and the car's doing 40. And we come pulling up. It's like 9:30 at night, and it's all dark out. And we have to come into the back side of the casino so everybody can hear us coming. And we come into the MTC, and there's maybe 100, 200 people. They all come running with their car, camera phones. And Ben Newbern, he's got the famous quote. He said, "Everybody, what is that god awful noise?" And he turns around, "Oh, it's just Al." So yeah, we did 18 miles on a rim. But yeah, so that's going to go down as my favorite rally. Nikki Nelson, the chairperson, she came up and she said, "You know, if you're on the podium and you have to do the champagne spray, you're changing that wheel before the podium." And I said, "No, we're not on the podium." Then 5 minutes later, she goes, "You're changing that wheel. You're on the podium." And everybody started cheering. And yeah, that was my first champagne. And I don't know, we lost to first place by 45 seconds to some British bald guy like Ian Holmes or something. I think he got first at that event.
Oh my, yeah, he'll like to remember that one, I'm sure. Definitely.
I think that might have been his first event too.
That sounds about when he was getting started. Yeah. So then, favorite stage though. So that was your favorite rally. What's your favorite stage that you've driven so far?
Favorite stage will be Herman of LSPR.
Yeah.
That's where Tower City Race Team was formed. It's years ago on specialstage.com. We all tried to decide which the top 10 stages or the top 20 stages in the U.S. was. I think Herman was voted number 3. It's just an extremely technical stage. One side of it's really fast. One side's really technical. Tons of elevation changes, lots of bedrock, lots of big rocks hiding. It used to be, for years, it was the very first stage of LSPR, and year after year, they'd lose 5 to 10 cars on that stage.
Wow. Just
because that's kind of the stage it is. And it's not a car killer. It's just, like I say, the tempo changes. You have to know when you're going from the 5s and 6s down to the 3s and 3 minuses, and there has been many, many car parts scattered in those hills.
I really want to go to LSPR someday. You know, now that I've gotten to experience so many of the rallies across the country, me being from the West Coast side. And speaking of that, I mean, I guess, is there any rallies you haven't competed in that you'd like to if you could go anywhere, even across the border?
Luckily, I just got this knocked out of my head, but... for years, I've always wanted to do Tall Pines. Just looking at the strength of the U.S. dollar versus Canadian, and then seeing those roads and the amazing television program they put together out there. You know, even if I just got, you know, 5 seconds or whatever. yeah, just the roads and the stories. And I'd really want to do Tall Pines. The one thing that scares me about it, which is also the Nemadji Winter Rally coming up in December, is sometimes the roads can be frozen and there's no snow. So they call it winter roads with summer ditches.
Right. Exactly. Well, at least it's not snow hiding where the ditch is, right? So at least you can see them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's those are definitely interesting conditions, especially sometimes the heat of the cars going over it then starts to melt kind of some of that surface a little bit, right? And can make it kind of interesting.
Yeah, we did... Nemadji Trail Rally last year in December, and I have a couple guys that helped me out, and Chris Greenhouse is one of them. Anytime I have a stupid question, he gives me stupid answers. I mean, good answers.
Chris is a friend of the show. We're well familiar with him. Yeah.
But yeah, I got a hold of him and I said, okay, tell me which tire I run for this. And he goes, okay, what do you got? I said, it's 34 degrees. The roads are frozen and it's gravel and it's frozen gravel. And he goes, any snow, any water? I said, no, it's sandpaper. It's frozen gravel. Well, I don't know. What do you got? So I just started sending pictures of the tires. And he picked out some tires for us, and we went and did what we did. And I think we made it 4.5 miles before I had a brake fail. I didn't know my brake failed until I got back on the road after we went in the swamp. But, yeah, we flew out in. We were so fast, and Nemaji has it's an amazing road. It's a small rally. I think it's 33 miles, but you race 8 miles in and 8 miles out, and then you come in for service and you go 8 miles in and 8 miles out, and really small low key event. And it's really nice. Susie Little is the organizer for that, and a great lady to work with and a great competitor. But we got back out of the swamp and we finished the extra 3.5 miles with no brakes, just doing engine braking. We got to the finish and it's a turnaround stage, and we come into a turnaround stage with no brakes, and everybody figured that out real quick. And but it was really cool. Every competitor came running with their own separate set of ice grips, and even Lachlan O'Sullivan came down with three sets of ice grips. And Adam Van Dam, who races the Rabbit now, he was my chief for a couple of years, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and, kind of a little Mexican standoff. Finally, he got down in his race suit, and he fixed my car for me in the 34-degree gravel, and after Al drove it through a swamp.
Oh, my.
Nick Roberts of Nick Roberts Global Rally Team fame, he came by. He had some proprietary Toyota fluid that we put into the brake reservoir, and we ended up finishing that event, and I think we missed the overall podium by 1.5 seconds, and we took fourth overall, but we did the rest of the event with three brakes. And when I sold that car to Mad Mike Halley, it still had that pair of ice grips under it. I let him know before he headed up here from Tulsa, you're getting a free pair of ice grips with this car.
That's classic, man. That is totally classic. So you also followed WRC, as we talked about before. Do you have a favorite current WRC event that some like lottery winnings or something like that you got to compete in or got to go see, which one would it be?
Actually, my ancestry, I'm 3/4 Finnish. My last name is actually pronounced Dantes, which is French, even though I'm Finnish.
We're all mutts, right?
My great-great-grandpa came over on the boat from Ellis Island, and his last name was Ferreira. But he had read the Count of Monte Cristo on the way over, and the hero in that book is Edmond Dantes. And when he tried to say his last name at Ellis Island, the guy said, okay, pick a new one. And that's how I got the last name Dantes. And being 3/4 Finn, raised in Herman, which is actually an old socialist Finnish homestead community village. A lot of old Finns up there. A lot of them still speak the old Finnish. And so I think that'd be really cool to see WRC Finland.
I can relate a little bit in that on my dad's side of the family, it's Scandinavian background, Scandinavian Scottish, kind of mutt stuff, of course. But and a lot of them come from Wisconsin, Michigan, all that. There was a huge volume of Scandinavian folks that ended up moving to that area. So
in my adolescent years, I lived in Wyoming. Oh. And my shop teacher said he was 100% Finn. And I said, yeah, right. I was 13 or 14 years old. And so I took one of my classmates over and I taught him some Finnish words. And he repeated them to the shop teacher. And the shop teacher gave me the eye and he said, do it again. So I said, oh, maybe he is Finn.
Yeah, right? I'm guessing Finland, favorite WRC stage. Gonna guess it's gonna be Unapoya.
Yeah, as far as I know, I watched the Red Bull recaps and I've watched it through the years, and yeah, that's the one they highlight.
That's fair. Yeah, you know, all those crests and jumps, it's insanity. The only full length Unapoya mock-up that I've ever been able to play, even on a simulator, was one that somebody created. They actually, you know, mapped it out in Richard Burns Rally, that game. It's kind of older, but the physics are really good, and I can't finish the damn thing without wrecking. It's just it's crazy. Yeah. It's insane.
My little brother, Elwood, he's a big video gamer, and that's what he likes to do. Is he calls me up on a Sunday afternoon and he says, come over here and play this. The new dirt came out. Well, it was kind of funny this year. I ended up winning a copy of it from Auto Week magazine, which rally driver Jimmy Pelizzari, he works for them. And he posted that they were doing a giveaway. So I tuned into their giveaway, and their first question was who was the all-time winningest WRC driver for championship. So I got that one right away. I got my free copy of Dirt, and I gave it to my little brother, and he invites me over every month or two, and he wipes the floor with me. But he's also a torque driver. He races pro stock UTVs.
Oh yeah, those, you know, UTVs are getting pretty popular.
Yeah, he's had a bit of a growing curve or a learning curve there, but yeah, it's unreal. Some of those guys are spending up to $50,000 on a UTV, and they smash them into each other and they wreck them. And it's one thing I don't miss, you know, with dirt track racing. A lot of people ask me that. They say, what's the difference between dirt track and rally? And I said, well, you go out on a dirt track and, you know, somebody's having a bad day. They can cause a lot of damage to your vehicle, and they can wreck this and tear it up and rip the wheels off. And, you know, if that happens in rally, there's really only one person to blame. And, you know, that's a co-driver.
Oh, I love that. Oh, so very true. So very true. But yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, that's, I think, one thing that drew me to the sport too, is that you can't blame anybody else. It's, you know, you and your co-driver and the road, and that's it, right? So. Yeah. Yeah, definitely more solitary sport in that respect. And it's such a great feeling that you can, you know, you don't have to worry about dodging somebody else to get to that apex or something like that. So,
yeah.
Cool stuff.
And I had that happen with one of my cars. It was just amazing. And one day some guy just didn't appreciate me passing him, and he turned right and I turned left, and pretty much destroyed my car. The entire chassis was just scrapped, and it's like, wow, just because this guy's having a bad day, he's just gonna ruin mine.
Yeah,
and, you know, didn't ruin my day, he ruined my year, ruined my chassis. It's like,
yeah, I just don't get that.
I really like rally.
I bet. I mean, and like I said, with rally, you know what's great is you bend up your car and you're in service, and you have all these people that, or at a turnaround, as you found out, you have all these people that come and help you, not say, ha ha, too bad for you, now I get to win, you know. It's such a different mindset.
I think it was Ojibwe 2013. Yeah. Ojibwe 2013, my wife and my two oldest daughters, and I had Scott Rudy as a co-driver, which he's a engineer from Lower Michigan. But we went out to Ojibwe. We stayed in we had two separate tents for 4 nights. Next to the railroad tracks in Detroit Lakes, stayed in the campground, and we had no crew, we had nothing, but we posted online. And there was a couple other teams that didn't have any crew, you know, and pretty much just said, you know, if you can set up our service area or help us out with this or whatever, you know, it'd be greatly appreciated. And probably something, you know, with rally, but we pulled into our service spot and I expected to see my wife there with a sandwich, but there was 13 dudes standing there ready to go to work on a Jetta. It was just unreal. They had a chair. I sat down in my chair. They had dinner ready. These guys just, I think my windshield got cleaned four times. They just had that many people doing so many things. And that was awesome. That was true rally right there. I still, to this day, I have no idea who any of them were.
Really? That's just
not a clue.
That's just so cool. These stories, it just, yeah. I mean, I shouldn't be surprised at this point. Yet I always am. You know what I mean? It's, you know, it just, I keep hearing this stuff, and just, they're just always so great. And it just keeps happening and happening over the years. And it just great stuff. Just great stuff. Well, now I'm going to move on to my tougher question that I always tend to ask with these. And you probably thought about it for a little bit, but it's like, it's the infamous, the blank check question. I guess that's what I call it. It's not really a blank check. It's just whatever. We always want to see rallying, of course, grow and improve in North America, whether it's America and Canada together or whatever. Where do you see rallying most deficient, and what would you like to see happen to improve it? Such as, you know, do you think we need to do stuff to attain more sponsors and promotion for events, more media, find ways to get more entries in there, closer competition, maybe through some regs changes? You know, as an idea, Dave Wallingford loves what Canada's doing with their TV program. You kind of mentioned that. I think maybe that might help sponsorship involvement if we did something like here in the States. Dylan Van Way, he mentioned to us that, you know, FIA like homologation to bring in newer cars that might draw in more people, more interest for manufacturers. You know, how will Al Dante save rally?
There's actually four or five different ways. I think the number one thing, and through all the different racing I've done through the years, this is the number one thing to grow a sport or to grow a tree, and that's to water your roots. If you have strong roots, you're going to grow a nice tree. It's going to have nice petals. That happens naturally. The competition comes naturally. The hard thing is just the American society and community the way it is. I do a lot in my local community with politics and the school board and the city government and stuff like that. And just organizations, it's hard to get people out and hard to get people involved. So I think the biggest thing rally needs, which it had in the 80s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, is clubs. You need to get the old clubs back together. You need to get new people coming to these clubs. But the American youth, they're not going to go to a meeting. They're not going to go to a meeting spot. So do we figure out how to do it online? You know, so, yeah, that's step one, establish a strong base. Number two is the availability of cars. Rally Works out of Minnesota has been awesome. I think they've built over 20 cars in the last year.
Wow.
Grant Hughes in Colorado, he's been building cars nonstop. You know, right now, LSPR just got over. I had five people ask me, dude, where can I get a car? And I have to go. I can make some phone calls, but if I could just point him at a shop and go, give this guy 10 grand, you got a car. You know, that's going to make it a lot easier. And I think that's one reason Pro Stock UTV racing is so popular, because a guy can do that. He can buy a UTV, change the seat out, put some belts in it. I think two bars in a cage, and all of a sudden he's a race car driver. So yeah, the availability of cars. I'm not going to tell Ryan Thompson, hey dude, we need to build more cars, or, you know, Rally Works is doing awesome. They've actually been going down south and finding cars and bringing them back to Minnesota, because obviously you can't find rust-free shells in Minnesota.
Good point.
So clubs, build some cars, and
what kind, you know, of cars ones, actually? Because, you know, there's you know, some people talk about, you know, we should start in two-wheel drive. There's the people that are the, you know, the normally aspirated, open, light, whatever, you know, the Subaru guys that think you should start there. I mean, the Subaru chassis, I'm a huge fan. It's freaking strong, right? And it's reliable, and there's a lot of parts available. But doesn't necessarily make the fastest, best drivers right from the start. It usually takes them a little longer because they're kind of easier to drive, right? So, yeah, I guess what kind of cars would you like to see in there? Or should we see maybe more of these UTVs? You know, there's a couple events that looks like are supporting UTVs. Should we maybe have that something as a standard supported throughout rallies, provided that they can be road legal enough for transits?
Yeah. As far as cars starting out, I've noticed on public discussions how it just goes downhill real quick. If, you know, somebody says, well, they should all start in Honda Civics. And, well, I want a Ford Focus and I want that. And I want, that's fine. You know, whatever you want to start out with, as long as the biggest key, and I've learned this with the RX-7, just make sure there's a rally suspension on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
If that car doesn't have rally suspension on the shelf, don't rally it. I've racing with NASA and Rally America and ARA, I don't know if novice rules really matter. NASA, they'll let you hop in anything. You show up with a 2017 Corvette with a cage and you're 16, well, maybe you have to be 18 with NASA, but they'll let you start the event. You know, you're going to have to pass your medical, but and we've seen this at Magnum Opus one year. This kid, I think he came from Tennessee, but he showed up with a STI and he had all these brand new stickers on it and he's ripping and raring and he was servicing next to us. And we had the Jetta and these guys had their flat brims and their tattoos and they were all excited and they really didn't understand that rally was a brotherhood. And this kid went tearing off first stage and piled it into the trees. Okay. So we came in for service and his entire crew had the car completely disassembled and they sat there for 9 hours. They disassembled that entire car and they put it all back together and the kid restarted the next day and he did it again.
That went, yeah.
Well, there's novice rules and then there's expensive learning lessons.
Right.
So as far as the novice rules, I really don't think they're that important. I don't. Side-by-sides, the biggest trick there is, you know, just the transits. There's only going to be a select couple events where you're going to be able to do side-by-sides.
Yeah.
So that's a non-issue there. I guess they don't segregate the side-by-sides. They actually intermingle. So that would be interesting. There is small talk of it maybe happening at Central UP Rally just because we don't have any highway transits. So I'll get to see that firsthand next year to see how that is. But yeah, the third point to grow rally, and this is the one that no one has been able to ever figure out, is to separate the pros from the regional guys. You know, it's kind of hard for one organization to serve two masters. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's always going to be the 80% saying, well, we want this, and you're going to have to take the other 20% and they want that, and it's two completely different things, and if an organization can figure out how to do that, and I think what's going to have to happen if anybody's going to be successful at it is it's going to take two separate managers, you know, almost like two different separate departments in a corporation. You know, you're going to have your regional side and your national side, and the national director is going to be in charge of promoting the national guys, and the regional director is going to be in charge of promoting the regional guys. And I really think that is what has to happen for it to work. And under the regional director, you would have your five separate clubs. And it gets awfully complicated once you get to that. But I think when the regional director can sell his championship and the national director can sell his championship, I think there can be a better representation there, but as long as there's only one director and one championship, I think the other 80% of the regional drivers are always going to feel as, you know, the also-rans and, you know, starting out, I actually did a park expose where they put my car in a back alley. And
oh, wow.
I paid the same entry fee as everybody else, and we were 40 feet 50 feet around a corner while everybody else was up on Main Street. And it's like, oh man, I was pretty angry that day.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that for sure. Yeah, I think, you know, my standpoint on some of that is, you know, I've seen some of the regional guys, which, you know, this is by far a small segment, but, you know, you see comments and stuff about people like, well, we don't need any spectators. We anything to keep the fees as low as possible. And that's kind of a non-starter for A Nationals that have sponsors, because you have to have spectators out there to encourage sponsors. And then you think of from the organizer standpoint, it's like, look, for us to afford to do these rallies, pay for the t-shirts and stuff for volunteers and all this stuff, you've done volunteering, so you understand how this works. Sponsors are a good thing, but you don't get sponsors unless you have spectator areas. So, and not to mention, how do you get more volunteers for the future? You need, they start out as spectators, don't they?
Yep.
And so that's definitely one of those things that, you know, that's one that I always call out. It's like, we need to have spectators. It just, it's a non-starter otherwise. I know that it would make cheaper insurance for a specific event, but that's not going to be enough to be sustainable for a long time, because volunteers burn out, and when those are gone, where are you going to get more?
Yeah, and like I mentioned earlier, there's less people involved with service organizations and clubs, and if it's not on TV or on their phones, they really don't want to do it.
Right. So your third thing was try and somehow find a way to make both those guys that are national and those guys that are regional both happy with distinct departments of regional and national guys to, you know, I guess managers of those two parts of a championship to be able to come to an agreement or whatever to promote each one independently and yet come together to make sure that the events run well for both, right?
Yeah. Okay. And that's actually one thing, it just occurred to me. Very few people know about it, but if you've ever watched the Canadian recap shows, they also have a separate series, which is the OPRC, which has the exact same director and video crews and the same recap, but it's their regional championship, and it's the exact same, except it's only the regional cars. They have their own show up there in Canada. You'll have to check that out. It's the OPRC.
I'll have to look that one up. I don't think I've seen it. That's great.
Yeah, it should be on YouTube.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. I mean, you gotta encourage the regional guys, because you're right. They are at least 70% of most entries for events, sometimes more.
Yep. For sure. And that's what grows the sport, you know. Mm-hmm. If somebody's truly talented, such as, you know, Chris DePlessis, I think he won his very first event. I think his first event was Maine Winter Rally, which was a tiny rally put on by John Buffum, I believe. And there was this guy, Matt Iorio, back then. He was a rallyist, but there was this young punk kid in a GTI. And there's rumors that he might have had extra weight in his front bumper or something like that. But some young punk kid named Chris DePlessis just walked everybody and taught him how to drive in a Volkswagen. That'll be awesome if he ever gets to come racing again. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he certainly is. He's a big fan. He's always been a good friend of the show, and I'd like to definitely see him manhandle a rally car again sometime in the near future. So what's number four? So you made it through three.
Yeah, I think I faded off there. but I know there's like four or five.
Yeah.
Those are the big three.
All right. I think, you know, like I said, and this isn't about trying to argue or anything like that. It's just, you know, what can we all do to try and make it better? And I do like your first point, though, about, you know, getting more people involved, like you said, at the club level or whatever. I agree with you 110% there. So moving on from the tough question to an even tougher question. What's next for Al Dantes?
Right now, I think my rally hangover is just kicking in, but the lead up to LSPR was just so intense for me. It's my hometown event, and I'm starting to get the reputation of, okay, what's Al doing? Okay, you know, we try to get the car out into the community as much as possible. We do the local parades, we do the car shows, and UP is really small, and so we had a lot of local businesses hop on board. You know, they're getting stickers on the car, they're getting their names on the t-shirts, and you just, as a driver, you're sitting there second guessing yourself, and you're like, dude, this could be over in a half a mile. This car could, you know, ignite, we could hit a tree, it could shoot, just blow up in a half mile, and you got all these people depending on you, and or not depending on you, but betting on you. And I knew where some of them were even on stages. You know, they let me know a week in advance, hey, we're having a bunch of people up to camp, we're gonna be waiting for you, you better make it. And, you know, so I'm ecstatic with how we finished. Right now, I'm glad to say the car is perfect. I guess I promised Rexine a new radiator, but I really, really wanted to wash the car and put it away for the winter. And then the Maji Trail released its supplementals today, and they have a prize fund. They're giving $500 and $300 and $200 to the winners of two-wheel drive and all-wheel drive. So it's kind of like, oh, man, I wanted to relax for a while. So in the short term, we're going to see if we can make that happen. In the long term, oh, man, life and rally. You never really know where it's going to take you.
Don't I know it? Yeah.
yeah, right now there are so many awesome events next year. And I know I'm going to have to be at Central UP Rally in June, end of June. But other than that, May's wide open, which would be our first of the year. Being a Uper, we get like 350 inches of snow here every year. So I have like zero desire to go race ice and snow, you know, like at Snowdrift.
You're like, I get enough of that, right?
Yeah, that's my everyday commute. No thanks. And everybody says, well, you can show them how good you are. No thanks. it's just not even appealing to me. So yeah, probably first event in May. Hopefully the car's still good. Car's good right now. In the future, I get more and more questions. I'm helping out more and more people. Organizations are asking me to help. Sanctioning bodies asking me to help. I help out where I can. Like I said, I'm on the local school board here. I have six daughters, so.
You're a busy man.
What am I having for breakfast tomorrow? I don't know. Oh, man. Where the future goes, no one knows.
Well, either way, I think it's going to be exciting. We definitely love having you out on the stages and all the things that you do to support rally in general. You know, one of the cool things, regardless of this sanctioning body stuff, is there's so many rallies to choose from, right? And I don't think I've ever seen a time that we've seen this many available rallies, actually. It's and the more the merrier, and I think that's a great thing. So it's great that you have so much choice. I hope all of them keep running. Thanks so much for being on the show and telling us some of those great stories. It's one of the things I just love so much about this sport is there's so many stories out there, so many that don't get told, especially those back farther in the field, and they're just as interesting as what happens at the front, and always love to hear them. Al Dantes, you have a fabulous, hopefully, Namaji. That sounds awesome about the potential winnings there. You know, a couple $100 probably doesn't cover a whole lot when it comes to rally, but the fact that you actually get to win something, that's pretty freaking cool. And congratulations to you and your co-driver for getting third in nationals. That is an amazing achievement. You guys obviously worked really hard for it. So keeping it safe definitely works, as does pushing when you need to. And obviously we were able to accomplish that. For everybody that's listening, please leave us a comment. Tell us how we're doing. Rate us on iTunes. Give us a follow on Facebook. All that typical mumbo jumbo. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. Thanks for listening. This is In the Paddock from OpenPaddock.net. Have a good night.